Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 742. Let's go to the Nerdist Community Corkboard. Another unnamed listener. You guys should write in your name so we can thank you properly. Anyway, this listener wrote in, my daughter and her partner launched a podcast production company based in the Washington, D.C. area called Goat Rodeo. They currently have two podcasts, Revivalism and The Goat Rodeo, and you can find them at goatrodeodc.com. Also, Ellen Sanders, thank you for including your name, writes, I've worked as a speech pathologist with geriatrics for over 25 years and as a leatherwork artisan for the last five. I listen while I do leatherwork and crack up all the time of attempting to make the transition to full-time leather artisan, so I recently opened my own standalone online store called worldofleathercraft.com. Well played. I make custom handmade wallets and other stuff with hand-carved art like Darth Vader, Yoda, Wonder Woman, anything else a fellow geek sends me a picture of. So there you go, worldofleathercraft.com. This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is Adam Goldberg, not the actor Adam Goldberg, Adam F. Goldberg, creator and showrunner of The Goldbergs, a fucking fantastic comedy show on network television, ABC, Wednesday nights, 8:30. And we just could not have hit it off any better with Adam Goldberg, all of our references are in the same bin. And I told him afterwards, like, you got to talk to Chris Jericho because Jericho is right on top. We are all, our pop culture references are all like right smack dab in one gray shaded area. So Adam Goldberg, again, The Goldbergs, Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m. on ABC. Here's Nerdist Podcast number 742 with a very funny Adam Goldberg, not the actor Adam Goldberg. Adam Goldberg, the writer and showrunner, creator of The Goldbergs. Katie, roll The Goldberg.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I have that same one-up shirt. I mean, sweatshirt, oh, yeah. By the way.
I bet you have the Darth Vader polo, too.
The Vader polo? Oh,
yeah. Actually, you fucking dork.
I don't have the Vader polo.
Yeah. Where did I get the Vader polo? My wife hates it so much, because she was like, oh, that's an... Oh, no. It's a really nice shirt. Okay.
It's still a nice shirt. It just happens to have Darth Vader instead of a polo player. Like, what's the fucking problem?
I have one that has an ad on it, and she's like, no, it's too much.
Really? Yeah. I think it looks like an angular horse.
There you go.
Enough back. Yeah, I loved like that the one up sweatshirt that you're wearing right now. I wore that thing into the ground.
Yeah.
It's very comfortable.
I bought like five of them.
Oh, you did?
When I noticed
that's smart.
Yeah.
That is smart.
It's my favorite thing ever. I love it.
I think I got mine on ThinkGeek. I got it on ThinkGeek.
They made it for a horror movie called Stay Alive.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I was doing Revenge of the Nerds, and they had a box of them. So I'm like, can I just take five of these?
Oh my god, that's fantastic!
Yeah. Yes, but we'll invoice you.
That's all I got out of that movie.
So how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Oh, we started.
Yeah,
I didn't even realize.
I know
the magic of Nerdist.
Okay,
just,
sure.
Just
everyone else
own
is holding
it, like,
the
mic. Let's give you some
slack. I didn't realize.
You can cup it from the underside if you want. You can cradle
like
it.
Katie's very stingy with the slack, always.
Yeah.
I didn't discourage you from doing it.
Now it comes out.
This feels good. Thank you for having me, guys.
Thank you for being here. Mr. Goldberg.
Mm-hmm. You guys knee deep in getting the season going?
We are. We just started last week. We shot our Risky Business opening episode, crashed a Porsche, made Sony upset because it's expensive. And unreasonable, but we're still shooting it this week. We had three scenes left we didn't get to, so we'll just spread them out over the
next
couple.
You couldn't get an 87 Porsche from a writer who got one gig and bought it immediately,
you know, it's
and
funny,
nothing else happened?
The Porsche we got, I think, cost like $3,000, and all the writers were like, I want to buy it. And then it broke down the minute it arrived on set, and then the writers were like, we're not going to buy it.
No, you're committed. It's an oral contract.
It's done.
You know, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, we've had two people on the podcast from Risky Business, Curtis Armstrong and Tom Cruise. No Rebecca De Mornay yet, though.
Okay, let's make that happen.
Fingers crossed, it could happen.
Can you pretend to be Rebecca De Mornay?
Sure.
I don't mean now. I mean, can you come over later?
Yeah, I can.
I'm going to pretend.
We actually, your wife called ahead and told us about your impeccable De Mornay.
I
booked a train.
Great.
Anyone remember? Anyone?
I remember.
Come on. There was more to the movie than just the socks and the underwear scene.
ABC would not let us do the train scene.
You know, what is television coming to if on ABC network you can't fuck a person on a train?
It was interesting watching the movie again because it had been a long time since I'd seen it, and it is a great drama. Like I remembered it just watching it as a kid and as a teenager and even in college, and it really, that movie is it's just a well-made movie and really well put together, and it's like really heavy. I didn't realize that.
It's stressful too.
Yeah, it's a stressful movie.
It's a stressful movie just because of what he starts to get into, and then the parents are coming home.
For sure.
And you know.
For sure. I didn't realize it was so heavy on prostitution when I was a child.
By the way, all stress from 80s movies is the parents are coming home.
The parents are coming home, yeah. But you know, the let's create a makeshift whorehouse was kind of that was a running thing in the, there was Best Little Whorehouse. Well, actually, Night Shift.
Sure.
We're gonna put out of a morgue.
Right.
Then high school students' house.
Yep. Yeah.
Those are the only two I can think of. But what a trend!
Yes, it was a short-lived trend.
There had to be other ones.
Duff 2 constitute a trend.
I feel like two is enough.
Sure.
That's a weird premise. It's like
Meatballs 2? No, not
Meatballs 2.
I remember that in an Alien during the E.T. trend.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Which
E.T. 2 was all about at 2 E2 was all was...
And Mac and Me. That's a trend. We need to have those puppet aliens
are you
coming
going
back.
Are you going to the at 2 E2 con this year?
Yeah, I'm going at 2 E2 this year. Just to see what the new fake alien prostitute movies are. Hey, that's what you really. I think it'd be fun to do Risky Business, but like on a space station. Like no one's done that yet.
Just go pitch it. I'm sure someone will give you the money.
That's true.
Just say those words.
Risky business means alien.
On a space station.
As a joke, I became friendly with the guy that played Wyatt, not Anthony Michael Hall, the other guy in
Ilya Mitchell-Smith.
Yes.
In, good pull,
Weird Science.
Hardwick.
It's a great pull. So as a joke, I started pitching him Weird Science 2 on Twitter, and then my agent got a call like, is that serious? Does he really have a pitch? Because we'll hear it. We'll do it.
Really?
So that is how it happens, believe it or not. It just I do have a pitch on it, but it wasn't like a thing, and it was kind of a joke.
Well, since you're asking, I do have a pitch on it.
You really had a pitch on it?
I did have a pitch on it,
Was it to use Gary and Wyatt as grown-ups? Okay.
It was that they have teenage daughters who are geeks. And they're both grown adults, and they're kind of out of the picture, and it's really about these girls who build, like, the dream guy. And it's the same movie plays out again.
Great.
Yeah. Oh, why not?
Nice.
Yeah.
I like that.
Well, that's it. Done. Let's write it right now. Let's
Does
be productive.
Does Kelly LeBrock have a son that she can make that guy?
That would be amazing.
I mean, it's just as a subtle. And by the way, you totally get Bill Paxton back. You totally get Bill Paxton back.
For sure. One of the best characters
He shows
ever.
Up regardless. he's just going to be there.
Well, at that panel a few years ago, at the Edge of Tomorrow panel, that Tom Cruise was on at Comic-Con, Bill Paxton was in the audience, and we brought him up on stage, and Tom Cruise made Bill Paxton do Chet lines on stage.
It's so great.
And by the way, why would he be just sitting in the audience? Why wouldn't they allow him a spot on that panel? He's in the movie quite a bit.
I don't know, actually.
That's so weird.
I know it's weird. I think that was part of the, like, what are you doing out there? You know you're in this.
I love
Get
that.
Like,
here.
Repeatedly in this movie.
I love it. Of all the movies he's done, that's the one. That and Aliens. Nothing beats Game Over Man.
Game Over Man!
It's the best.
He's been in so many movies.
Yeah. When I was in college, he did this directed movie called, I think it was called Traveler, about gypsies. And he came and talked in front of the NYU students, and all the kids did during question answer was like, say Game Over Man. Say a Chet line. He was a great sport about it. All he did
was. He's awesome. Why isn't he on this podcast? We should have him come on.
I don't know. We got to get DeMornay on. We've got to talk to Adam.
Adam could come back for the Paxton episode.
Adam can come back for all this.
I will come back for Paxton anytime.
What's an example of a movie that you totally got burned
other
by?
Favorite con, Paxton
when
East.
Paxton East, when you Paxton Prime, you're gonna do Paxton Prime. When you maybe showed your significant other or a friend or a child, like, oh, this movie is amazing, and then you watch it again, and you're like, oh,
there's a bunch. One was starting to show my 7-year-old Cloak and Dagger.
Yeah.
Which had so much violence, it terrified him. I had to turn it off.
I'm surprised. Kids love Dabney Coleman.
I know. It kind of interests me, like, all those kids' movies had toys. Was there going to be a Dabney Coleman toy? Do you think they were going to do that? That would have been
maybe
amazing.
From Hot to Trot.
Yeah, exactly.
Or the Short Time pool. Lego playset.
Yeah.
Short Time? Huh?
No, I don't remember Short Time.
You don't remember Short Time?
No.
Oh, it's great.
Great movie. So basically the concept is he's a cop who's going to retire, and he finds out he has cancer, and his insurance he has to get killed in the line of duty in order to collect an insurance policy
to
or
take care of his family.
It's him for the day just trying to get killed
as
a cop.
So he basically becomes a super cop because he's doing all this crazy shit.
Guys, this is a great pitch. Make it.
It
got made.
What?
That's a remake.
That's
a remake
and a half.
And you're the only person who's ever known that movie. I've brought it up about.
It's a fantastic movie.
Guys, we get Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
No. He's got to be the partner. You expect Dwayne The Rock Johnson to be the super. Dwayne, if you're talking about the story structure of this type of movie, Dwayne has to be the guy that everyone loves. Dabney Coleman's character is the schlubby guy that no one pays attention to. And then out at the end.
Now we're just pitching the other guys.
True. Now you find out at the end that Dwayne, that character, is actually kind of a wuss.
Yep.
You know, and that this other schlubby character is actually the dude.
And then one other movie is Flight of the Navigator. That one does,
Flight of the Navigator
does not hold up.
It doesn't hold up well because you've seen Flight of the Navigator?
Yeah, and I would see the ship every time I'd take the backlot tour at Disney MGM Studios.
I didn't realize that Pee Wee Herman.
Yeah, it was Paul Rubens, and so he was doing an approximate. He was doing Pee Wee without saying it was Pee Wee.
Yeah. Yeah,
it felt really weird.
Really weird. Was it before Pee Wee, do you think?
No, it was around the same time. Pee Wee started in the late 70s.
Right, okay.
Early.
So those two. Maybe Explorers as well. I've showed some people.
Oh, sure, Explorers.
I brought a bunch of friends who had never seen Tron to when they had the anniversary, and everyone just afterwards made fun of Tron, and I sat there in shame.
No, they don't understand. Like, they didn't. But you have to explain to people, like, you understand, all the CG. They didn't have programs.
No,
they had to plot points in a. They had to build it all.
I know what's interesting. Speaking of not having CG in the Tron like design, if you watch Escape from New York, they do like a computer model of New York. But what they did was just painted a model of New York black and then put neon paint stripes on everything, and that's how they made the computer New York.
Well, they basically in Tron, they basically did like photo negatives, and then they painted. In the red and the blue.
I went with a bunch of writers who just cared about the story, and they're like, the set pieces didn't advance any action whatsoever. It was just like, let's stop to just throw some discs at each other. There's not even like a bad guy really. It's just all kind of
The MCP is the
sure the Master Control Program. I tried to explain it to them. They didn't get it.
I hope you fired all of these idiots. Because that is a good movie. Actually, I do think Tron is sort of a tough sell.
It's a tough
wonder,
sell.
You love Tron.
I do. No, it's a tough sell if you didn't see it when it came out.
I totally agree.
If you
totally
saw it when it came out, it was life changing.
It was life changing. I collect Tron stuff. I with the re-release of the movie, I had a show called Breaking In at that time, and I would leave. This was where my priorities were. I would leave because the Tron 2 was coming out. I would wait in line at this pop-up store in Culver City because they were going to release a pair of prototype Tron sneakers, mm-hmm. which I ended up getting.
Oh, so sure. The Velcro on it?
Yeah, the Velcro, and they light up. Yeah. So I hope Sony's listening. I might have shut down a show to get a pair of sneakers. So, but they light up, and they say Tron on them.
Wait, first this, then the Porsche?
God, you're just wasting.
Well, this is what happens when they give, you know, people like me TV shows. It's, you know, the priorities are a little, like in that same show, I hired Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Piper, yeah.
So he could sign my They Live poster, which he signed Keep Chewing That Bubble Gum, which is just so good.
That's
the best.
So wonderful.
So nice. And he was great. I bought the Nike, the Air Max, the Back to the Future 2 sneaks, and did an episode about them. So I could charge the show naturally.
Beautiful.
So that's
I'm going to say you're doing it right. You are doing it 100% right.
And then I did a show about the 80s to get all the toys I ever wanted Adam's Room.
I feel like most people.
You're living my dream right now.
Living the dream.
How lucky are these people? How lucky is the network? I mean, you know what? 20 years ago, maybe 25 years ago, you would have had your face buried in a pile of coke.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Yeah.
If you were a sitcom star back then, but now.
Now.
You just want toys.
I want toys, and maybe, if anything, some new coke. Yeah. You know, because it's an 80s show.
You mean the collectible can of new coke? Yeah.
Do you guys buy into the theory that they did that on purpose to change the formula of coke?
In fact, the formula they say was better. And it was just all they were competing with the Pepsi challenge.
And it tasted like Pepsi.
And it tasted like Pepsi. So they were, you know, it was just, we've talked about doing an episode, but it's a hard sell to Coke. Like, we want to do a story about your biggest disaster. that's a hard sell.
Jeans.
Yeah, I know. So
I think it sounds great. We'll do it as a webisode.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, you guys always want webisode. Digital content. Let's do a little webisode.
Then I don't have to get anyone's permission, I suppose, for webisodes. This is good. We'll do this.
I think that it's wonderful that you're keeping all this stuff alive. I have been burned several times in relationships although my previous my ex girlfriend Janet, one of the things that we came together over is that we both collected Tron toys.
Yeah.
And I had never met a lady who collected Tron toys before Janet, and so it was like a
I get it.
Nor
I
will
get
you
it.
Again.
Nope.
No. No.
She had the recognizer, like on the first time we went out, she set this recognizer toy like out on the table as a sort of like a here, look what
that's amazing. Yeah. I'm trying to think. I mean, I've been with my wife since I was 16, and I think we're in that thing where it's like our taste in movies is so different at this point because she wants to feel emotion and I just want to like go and I don't know.
She must have loved Risky Business.
I took a test of like, have you seen these worst movies ever? And I'd seen almost every single one. So as I get older, if you look at my Netflix queue, it's like Wrong Turn Part 4. And I don't know. Something about my taste in movies has just gotten worse and worse. And she's classy now. She loves like, you know, anything with people with English accents.
Oh, yeah.
So it's...
It's a ruse.
I would love for her to come and bring a recognizer or even a disc of Tron. Just a basic disc. One disc of Tron.
How disappointed were you by Tron Legacy?
I don't think I've ever had such high hopes.
For a movie that met every expectation.
And look, I loved that they put Tron back out there. I'm always like I thought they didn't nail a good story, but hopefully they'll do another one and get it right. I thought it looked great.
They pulled the plug.
It's good to hear. Good to hear. Maybe I should tweet. I have an idea for Tron 3 and Disney.
Why don't you guys get sucked into a computer?
Yeah.
On your show.
Yeah, that's what I would. I like to keep things grounded, but why not? Just an Apple II Plus, they go right in.
I think every generation could, like, their, what they get sucked into is a different version of their reality.
It's funny. I actually briefly pitched Tron 2 before it was even a thing, just because I love Tron so much. And what I realized in pitching it, it's a really hard job. So I think when I watched it, I didn't fault anybody. It's a hard – I mean, I didn't come up with the idea that basically dad was still in there and son has to go rescue him. I thought that was a great idea. Yeah. I didn't think of that. So I thought it had some great stuff. It just – to me, like when they're building an army – I was like, for what? They're in a computer.
Right.
Is the army going to come into our world and then they get shot? I just didn't – like stuff like that I didn't understand about the movie, but I thought it had some great stuff in it actually. So that's my answer.
Yeah.
My
official answer. I think, you know, in the original one it sort of made sense because there was this kind of philosophical idea of like we're relinquishing too much control to these machines and they're becoming smarter and you know, and it is, and Master Control Program basically is artificial. He does become artificially intelligent, and so so back then it was really cool.
Yeah.
Now I think that story, I'm like, I don't know.
I think my pitch had to do with basically they went into a new computer and had to basically somehow tap into it into the old IBM. And
so
like,
they needed to get a USB adapter.
Yeah, exactly. It was like all about crossing into the old world and kind of mixing like the new technology with the old technology. I don't know. I don't remember. It was 10 years ago. But
you
still.
You know, I think in this age of reboots where they pretend like movies didn't happen a couple years ago, I think you could
for sure
reboot Tron
2. Maybe. I actually do that a lot. One of my favorite things is to take movies that I love that I grew up with and think of sequels and then try and make it happen, like Mighty Ducks 4. Is one.
I'm listening.
I came up with a whole, it's like a 20-page treatment, and I've pitched it.
Do you have
a
Goldberg jersey?
Well, that was, the movie meant a lot to me, because the goalie on it was named Goldberg, and he wore a Flyers jersey, and that was like, I was from Philly, so, and it spoke to me and my brother Barry, and we watched it, and when we would play hockey together, we would pretend we were the Mighty Ducks or whatever, so the movie meant something, and I go in, and it's basically one of those things where like, no one, Disney called at one point when the Goldbergs just happened, and they're like, if Adam wants to do a movie, we're in. And then my agent was like, he has Mighty Ducks 4. They're like, we're out.
No!
So it was like anything but Mighty Ducks 4. But I have a whole pitch. Another one is the GoBots movie.
The GoBots.
Yeah.
They were so gummy.
Yeah. They were so – I believe I'm the only one that I have the whole collection all encased in individual cubes. Yep.
God,
in
my office. I couldn't – the GoBots really bothered me. I was a Transformers guy because I feel like the GoBots, it was almost like, are their bodies liquid metal? Like they were so fluid. Like it was like fluid. And even as a kid, that really bothered me.
The thing I loved about GoBots, in my family, it was never about quality. So Transformers were quality.
Sure.
Like the story was quality. The robots were complex. The GoBots were from GoBotron, and they basically, you know, okay, so we imagine them like sitting around the table.
So
inventing,
GoBotron wasn't running Russia.
And the whole thing is, it's so comedic. It's like all these guys sitting around, okay, Transform. They were actually first, but I like to imagine that Transformers is out, and they're like, we gotta compete. So, all right, we have a tank. It's a robot. It folds into a tank. Like you said, it literally folds.
Yeah.
That's how it transforms. You fold it in half. What's its name? And then someone goes, tank. Great, next. And that's like, they're all like the copter. The helicopter is named Copter.
Here's
like,
what I imagine. They're sitting around a boardroom and they had flashcards drawn up of each of the characters and they would just put it up and they go, tank. Great, next.
Great. Bulldozer, dozer. And, you know, and then there was a guy who wanted to take over Earth, but you didn't really know why, and they didn't explain anything. So, maybe like 8 years ago, approached Hasbro about doing a GoBots comedy. And for the last 8 years have been developing this pitch. But the property is so confused because no one really wants – they can't figure out almost who owns it.
It's so weird.
Yeah, it's so weird. So it's like, is it Bandai? Is it – so they're always running into legal problems, and it can never really happen because no one really knows who 100% owns this thing.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's almost like Tetris.
Exactly.
We don't know. No one really owns it.
It's a puzzle game, sort of? I guess. I think Russia owns it.
I think, well, technically,
Gorbachev?
I think that's...
Maybe Gorbachev
I think,
owns
I think
it?
Technically that's true, yeah.
Globatron.
Globatron. Globatron.
Globatron.
Yeah, it's such a bummer that those types of weird... I don't think people realize... Because I think people just assume, well, we have access to anything. You can track someone down. But there are a handful – there are things that just like fell into a weird crack.
Totally.
That no one has thought about for a long time. And they're almost untraceable.
Yeah.
I mean, like you'd really have to hire a CIA agency to sit down and track all the thing and like find the guy. There's a guy somewhere that could just go, yeah.
Absolutely. They we have a hard time on the show. You know, any toy, any movie, TV show, we have to get permission, and it's impossible. I think the coolest and worst part of my job is I'm writing letters every day to like the weirdest things. Like I wanted to show at one point there was like a really obscure 80s thing called Food Fighters, and I'm like, oh, it'd be cool if they were like in the background.
The little French fries.
And like that were shaped as they were kind of good guys and bad guys. And so they're like, you got to write a letter. So I'm like, dear owner of Food Fighters, this toy defined my childhood. And then at the end of the they're like, yeah, we don't know who owns it. It was some guy. Like, I'm just a guy. I'm a lawyer who kind of handles the thing. So yeah, if they fall into these weird, obscure.
Oh, I bet it just like was part of an estate that got willed to someone that no one knows, or it got just like bought, like corporate acquisition, and it's just in a weird. But, you know, instead of trying to pursue GoBots, why don't you just make your, like, what? I'm just going to pitch two names at you.
Sure.
Either GoldBots.
Sure,
or Goldbergs.
Goldbergs. For sure.
Goldbergs.
Yeah.
I think you could just make it yourself.
everything transforms into a Jewish guy.
If they all have bad stomachs. If 50 Shades of Grey.
They're all just trying to get lactate.
Sure, yeah.
If 50 Shades of Grey can be Twilight fan fiction and that, and everyone knows that, and that's okay, why couldn't... Like why couldn't Goldbergs just be robot version that was appropriated from a GoBot storyline?
Yeah. No, absolutely. That's you know, there's the mother Goldberg, the mother GoBot, GoldBot, who you know, this maybe the son's going to college and she stays in his dorm room because she doesn't want to separate.
She
from can't. Him.
She's always, she always recognized. I know you just changed into a machine. I know that you're not the.
But no, it's like the letters is exhausting, but cool. I've gotten in touch with some really cool people that like I worshipped as a kid through the show. That's been really cool.
Like,
I'm trying to think. I think one of the coolest things that's happened. I've never told the story, but we were doing like a WWF episode. The first season, and that was huge for me and my brother. I have so much video of us like wrestling, and I was always Ultimate Warrior. He was Hulk Hogan, and you know, he's 7 years older than me, Barry, so he would just destroy me, and I was just thrilled because my brother's paying attention to me. So I'm like, yeah, suplex me, do whatever you want. And
your brother turned out to be racist, by the way.
yeah, I picked the good one. So then the Ultimate Warrior passed away 2 years ago. And I just so happened to have shot my WWF episode. So I called my producer and I'm like, I think every episode I dedicate it to my brother and I show my home footage. What if we just dedicated this one to Ultimate Warrior? Because that was like my guy growing up. And so we contacted the WWF. They're like, we own every bit of likeness. No. So that was done. And I went on Twitter and I'm like, does anyone know, like, does anyone have a picture of the Ultimate Warrior or anything? And through Twitter and fans, I got a call. They're like, Mrs. Warrior's on the phone for you. And
Mrs.
I was like, what?
Warrior.
And so I pick up the phone and this is like only a couple weeks after he had passed away, maybe 2 weeks. And she's like, you don't understand. This is the weirdest thing. Like, you're in our house, your show is like our show. We watch it with the kids. My husband would sit in the den and we'd hear his bellowing laugh, and he always would say, I put too much confidence in a fart, because that's what Adam said at one point, and they had to bury his underwear in the yard. And like the fact that this was your guy growing up and he just left us, this is like it's like him reaching out saying everything's going to be okay.
Oh,
it
shit.
It was so cool. So we I had his wife and the kids to the set, and we put them on the show, and it was just really cool because like it was so cool that he, you know, I grew up on this guy, and then it, like my show meant something to his family, and it was just that was a really cool moment.
Yeah, you it's there was almost like a reflective influence. He influenced you, and then you later on, he was almost like he was getting that influence back through you. Ah, yeah. Oh, that's so amazing.
It was really cool. So aww. That kind of stuff.
Joe Bob Briggs.
Yeah.
What happened to Joe Bob Briggs?
I
loved Joe Bob Briggs.
It would. I think. I'm trying to think. I wonder from time to time what happened to some of those guys. Like, what's Junkyard Dog doing right now? Like,
oh, he's dead.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, man. That sucks.
Well, I guess decomposing would be the
thing. Georgie Animal Steel? What's he? Is he a professor? I imagine being a professor.
I believe is dead as well.
Well,
you'd be hard pressed to name a wrestler who isn't dead from the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah. I don't know, man. It's.
Texas Tornado, dead. British Bulldog, dead.
Really?
Jake the Snake, somehow still with us.
Yeah, well.
Keep going, Jake.
I wonder if the snake's still around.
Oh, Damien, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the python. Yeah,
you know your stuff. That's good. He knows the name of the snake.
They live a long time.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
I think Matt just got a writing job on your show is what happened.
Hey, guys, I have this new guy here. He knows the name of the snake. Do any of you know
it's
the
Damien,
name?
Damien, guys.
I'm available. I'm already in the guild. It's fine.
Oh, look at Teacher's new helper. Like, everyone just fucking hates you because you...
Yeah.
You just keep reminding Adam in the room, hey, Damien, there's some good times.
So many times in the ride, one guy, Andy Secunda, who...
Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah, he said he wants to... He said say...
He's a brilliant improviser.
He's the best, and he's like... He and I are the only ones who really will get deep into it, and everyone else, like, rolls their eyes at our... Like, that would be something, like, that we do in the room. Like, get really specific into some 80s geekery and... But, yeah, I like hiring people that I don't know stuff about like I have major thing like sports. I know nothing.
I got
so,
you covered. What do you want to know?
Yeah, that's where Matt's kind of weird is that he knows he has very deep trenches of knowledge about some things that seem obvious and other things don't seem obvious. Knows a ton about baseball.
Right.
Knows a ton about wrestling. Mm-hmm. Knows everything about Star Trek: The Next Generation.
Yeah.
Also can tell you everything about Frasier and Cheers.
Sure.
Like,
sure.
There's a lot of different strains. Yeah. There's a lot of different things that are seemingly unrelated.
I know about the American Space Program. I can tell you all about that, too.
Loves NASA.
The joke in the room with me and sports is, like, that I'm at the point where I'm like, so how does this work? You go to a place and you sit in a chair? What is this? And you watch a game? I know it's...
Well, it's like the Mighty Ducks are happening for real in front of you. What?
Yeah. There was I kind of know hockey just because my dad forced me to play it. But other than that, there's a major.
Position did you play? I wouldn't know if what.
Left wing.
That's true.
Left wing. I did an episode about it. I scored on my own goal. and it was the only goal I ever scored. And then in the car ride home, there was silence. And my dad looked at me and goes, you don't have to do this anymore. You don't want to.
Did you feel relieved or were you like...
So relieved.
Oh, good.
So relieved. It was... I had this realization recently. A friend of mine had a bachelor party at our old camp. So it was kind of like a camp reunion / bachelor party. And it was the best. But I had a lot of anxiety about going back into a bunk where I felt like... Kids teased me sometimes, and it was very cathartic, and I had to play sports as an out-of-shape 39-year-old with people who were great at sports back at camp. Now, mind you, this is Jewish summer camp, so how good could we have really been? you know, if you could do a layup, you're Michael Jordan. But I went there, and I had this realization where when they were playing baseball, I had this realization where I thought everyone's experience playing baseball was me in right field going, please, if there's a God, if you are listening, do not hit the ball to me. If you do it, please, I am praying to you, do not have the ball come to me. And I realized in that moment, there's people that have the experience, please, I want the ball so bad.
Yeah.
I'm dying. I want to touch it. I want to throw it. I thought everyone had that experience with me, which was like torture. And
no, I loved it.
Yeah.
No. I feel like I was more like Milhouse when Homer starts coaching Bart's football team. And they throw him to me, and he's like, "No, Bart, please, no!" Like I was like,
"Yeah,
I don't want it. Yeah, yeah. I'm good.
I didn't realize that there were people out there that desperately wanted to actually play, and it was fun.
Finding their glory in the physical universe.
Sure.
Strange.
Sure.
I'll take dick jokes, thank you. I don't need to prove anything in catching a ball for a reason.
Exactly.
But I think that's smart to sort of, you know, that's kind of the Lincoln construct of surround yourself with people who,
for sure,
you know, your team of rivals, who people who know things that, for you sure, don't know.
It is helpful to have writers that have a very needy mom, and kind of, that is helpful. I find that the overbearing Jewish mother is kind of universal amongst many people.
Overbearing Catholic mother?
Sure, yeah.
No, you know, not even overbearing. My mom's pretty rad, actually. We're pretty close, but very, I should say, I don't mean overbearing, overprotective.
Yeah.
Which,
yeah,
is, you know, I think overbearing is more like, when are you going to do your homework? You know, my, yeah, mom was just like, don't, if you leave the house, I want you to call, yeah, me the minute you leave.
There's – my mom is definitely – it's interesting. I mean, I don't want to hurt her feelings here, but
– she loves the podcast, by the way.
She's a, yeah, big fan. No, huge. She'll listen. Believe,
really,
me.
Really?
She will listen. Oh, yeah. Aww. I think she has a Google alert on me at this point. But no, I mean, look, the Beverly in the show is a very – Disney-ish version of my real mom, who was like storming down to school every day, demanding excellence. And I can't – the bummer is like I have to pull back. Like I can't do the stories that I really would love to do. I'm trying to think of like if there's an example. I don't think I've told this one yet. Maybe – but one I was telling in the room was
– exclusive.
Exclusive. One I was telling in the room was my mom was addicted to shopping, and we did an episode about it. And ABC and Sony had a lot of concerns because they're like, it's just – it's like unlikable, and she's like wasting money, and it's not – it was not one of our better episodes because she wasn't – she was being more selfish. She wasn't being – people love Beverly when she's like giving everything to the kids and it backfires. That's like the formula, right? So we went out of our comfort zone because I'm like, this is part of my mom. She's obsessed with shopping. And – Wall-to-Wall Sound and Video was a place on the East Coast that was going out of business, much like Blockbuster just did, right? So they had like everything is half off, and my mom is like, we got to go now. So we go. It's like all everything must go clearance, and my mom lost – and I'm like 11, and my mom completely loses control, and she's like dumping in TVs and boom boxes and like even stuff that was broken, like this is virtually free, she would just throw it in the cart. So we had two carts. I was pushing one, she was pushing one, and I go, Mom, look, buy one video, get four free. And my mom is like, oh my God. So we go over and I stop, and it's like hardcore porn. And I'm like, oh no, Mom, I think these are like bad, you know, adult movies. And my mom's like, I don't care. And she puts her arm like behind the row and just like dumps them all into the cart. So we came home with like a giant satchel, a sack filled with pornography. And I vividly remember, my brothers remember it vividly too, like my mom dumping it on the table, and it's like a mountain of porn videos, Ron Jeremy, like the classics.
Yeah, sure.
And I'm sitting there with my mouth hanging open as my brothers and my dad are fighting, like, you know, I want, you know.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And my mom is just beaming, like, I did good. This is the bargain of all bargains. So, like, that's the reality of my mom.
And, you can't show that on.
On, you know, the show was initially for Fox, and I was going to do all those stories, but. You know, I think the funniest stories I can ever do, just
right,
because they're that. They're my,
you know,
mom.
What though? For a family channel, families come from sexual intercourse. More penetration in prime time.
The standards on ABC is amazing. It's I mean, we get notes. I got notes that I wasn't allowed to say poop three times.
Are you serious?
And I'm like, my 4-year-old reads a book, Everybody Poops. Like,
we say it on I do a show on Nickelodeon, a cartoon, and we say poop fart all,
yeah,
the time.
Yeah, they wouldn't, you know, they boobs anything. They, you know, they really want to keep it wholesome. And frankly, I don't even do that. I never thought I'd ever write like a wholesome family show, and I realized probably about 5 episodes in that that's what this was. So we don't even do that stuff anymore. It doesn't feel right. But there are those times where you would love to do we're doing an episode where my dad grew a mustache in the 80s because that was like the thing. He loved Magnum P.I. and he had a mustache for a long time. So I'm doing an episode about that. And Murray has a line where he talks about his he rents a Ferrari just so we could ride around in it. And he talks about this is my mustache ride. And I know I'm going to get a note from them about you can't say mustache ride. And it's essentially the only reason we did the story, just for that joke. Because he has no idea what a mustache
I think you can make the justification. It's like
can you email? Can we do this? Can you email standards? All right,
yes,
let's do
I'm
it.
Email standards. I'm gonna get you GoBots, yeah. And I'm gonna talk to standards.
This is this has been very productive.
Mustache
for me
rides.
Mustache rides.
It is good sometimes, I think, to have those hurdles to have to write around, because it does force you to be more creative.
Yes,
when you want to make a poop joke or a fart joke or so I think in some sense it's actually really good.
For sure. It's like Jaws, you know? The shark didn't work and you got to get creative.
Bruce.
It's Damien.
Bruce the shark, Damien's the snake. Hey guys.
What's up?
What's the hot to trot horse? Do you know that?
No.
Okay. That's all right.
No, I don't remember. That's funny you mentioned that, because Bobcat was just on, and he told a story about how the horse hated him.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Get along. The horse fucking hated him. Would not, you know, just like took dumps or in front of him.
I love it. One of those weird 80s movies. Man, there were so many good ones back then. Where's that, 90s? No, that's 80s.
No, that was
80s.
No,
that's 80s, 80s, like 88.
Yeah, Dabney. Dabney was in it. Yep. God damn it, he was so good.
I know.
I mean, he's still good, but I mean, he was in so many of those movies in the
For
80s.
Sure.
God damn it.
Yeah, he was.
We should have a Dabney Coleman retrospective. At the Greek.
You know, at the Greek.
Yeah.
I was just thinking Cinefamily, family, but if you think we can fill like 5,000 seats.
I've bad news. You've just been bankrupted.
What?
By your
That's impossible.
I rented out the
Hang
Greek.
On,
did you not hear what we said? Dabney Coleman movies.
I don't understand.
That's 9 to 5.
Who's
That's
our
short
accountant?
Time.
Fire
That's
them.
Cloak and dagger.
Sure.
What the fuck anymore?
Yeah. No, I was a big fan.
Did you ever put him? Did you ever? He's still alive. Like, he was on Boardwalk. You could put him on.
I would love to have the hard thing too is a lot of these people who were really big in the 80s reach out, and for example, Scott Baio. I talked to him on Twitter. He's a really cool dude, and I would love to have him on the show. But he's on the wall in the girl's bedroom as says Scott Baio.
Right.
So if he walks in, it's like Uncle Ted. It's going to be like, you're Scott Baio. That is the hardest
Maybe
thing
that's
the show.
Something she has to cope with.
Sure, that her uncle.
Looks
her
like
uncle
she
looks
wants like
to fuck her uncle.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I mean, I know
you look
ABC,
just like Scott Baio.
I'm not Scott Baio, though.
I'm not
she
at
has
all.
Some feelings she I'm has to uncle. Deal with.
So, yeah, maybe that's the answer. Maybe that's the answer. Scott Baio.
Again.
Just,
I'm
looks
available.
Like...
Matt just wants a great sitcom writing job. But it's a good because Scott was directed TV for a long time.
Yeah.
I did a sitcom in 1998, and he directed a bunch of the episodes.
What? Which one?
What? You wouldn't know it.
Oh.
It was on UPN.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Yeah, it was a show called Guys Like Us. It was created by Dan Schneider.
Yeah, sure.
And
I remember that one because it was – I think the bit was, is it Guys Like Us or Guys Like Us?
Yeah, Guys Like Us.
Like Guys Like Us?
Guys Like Us.
Or
I always
like
used to
us.
Sing it with the Spies Like Us theme. Guys Like Us. But nothing saved that show. Yeah, it was like Dan's briefly stepped out of his Nickelodeon paradise to work in network television.
He has an empire.
Never again. Well, I think that cured him.
Stepped back to his ivory tower.
Yeah.
But it was Scott directed a bunch of those episodes, and you know, and then there were a bunch of guys who directed like classic, like Joel Zwick, who just directed some of the greatest television from the 80s.
Yeah,
are you working with any of those guys as directors?
I'm trying to think. I mean, we have David Katzenberg is like our in-house EP, so he directs half. I'm trying to think. I just kind of go with the tried and true guys.
It is the sweetest gig in television is directing a sitcom.
It is. I mean, well, you know, I'm a multi, so it's a nightmare.
Right.
When George first signed on for the Goldbergs, I don't We're 99% sure he thought it was a sitcom, and he's right. like, because he did Just Shoot Me,
right,
so yeah. like George Segal coming in, and we're like, no, George, this is. He's like, where's the audience? So we're like, no, George, it's a single cam, and he's like, oh, is that good for the actors? And we're like, yeah, it's great, George. But it's you're shooting a movie.
Well, while you're setting up, I'm going to play my banjo.
Yeah. Oh, I love him when he does his banjo. We try and put it on the show whenever we can. It's the best. But you're shooting a movie every week, and I try to make it like cinematic, like The Wonder Years. So it's it can be a logistical nightmare most weeks.
Do you ever worry like, what if I run out of 80s?
Then we'll go to the 90s.
I guess you could.
We could, right?
They did it on Happy Days, didn't they? Didn't they jump decades in Happy Days?
I think the last
year...
Didn't they
jump to 1960?
I think in the last year they were in the 60s.
Yeah.
Will I run out of the 80s? I mean, God, I should be so lucky, right? I guess. I mean, right now we're in the third season. We've done 50.
Wow.
They're still... We're not struggling yet.
When is syndication?
100.
I guess 100.
Oh, you're halfway there.
I'm halfway there.
Season 5.
Yeah. That's it. It's especially cool because the critics hated the show when it premiered.
They don't know shit.
It was very polarizing. I get it. I mean, it was different because it was a different show when I shot the pilot. It was I was still in that Fox mind frame. It was going to be loud, and I thought it edgy or something. And it was really like an expose of my crazy family. And then once I saw the reviews and saw what people thought, and I was like, no, I'll just make it like – super nostalgic and relatable. So I kind of shifted the whole tone in between pilot and the series. But people said we were going to be canceled in one episode.
You know, they shouldn't even review a show until after the first season.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you don't even know.
I know.
It's not even, everyone knows how television works. Like, it takes time to find a voice.
Out of the gate, Frasier is pretty great.
Yeah, it is. It is. And Modern Family. Honestly, like, all the great shows are great.
Technically, though. It's not like they just started Frasier from scratch. Like they had the team in place. Like they had a good team in place.
Fair enough.
Going into that, they already knew who Frasier already knew who his character was. They just kind of.
What is a show that was terrible out of the gate and became amazing?
People didn't like Seinfeld in the beginning. Yeah, it took a few episodes for Seinfeld to click into place.
Yes.
What else? Parks and Rec.
That's one. It is. But that's because, like, they didn't, like, shoot a pilot even. They were like, just put it on the air! And they just, like, threw it up there. That's true. Like, the first season I watched, it was uneven, but then it becomes the greatest thing ever. So.
Yeah. In terms of sitcoms that are considered the best I don't know, actually.
Oh, Star Trek The Next Generation starts out real bad.
I remember watching
it. And turns into a hilarious sitcom.
I remember watching it live on TV. And
syndicated.
I thought it was great, but
Well, I did too. I was a kid, though.
That's the thing. Yeah. When you're a kid, we're talking about that in the room the other day. Like, what was the first movie when
Batman
you were a
Robin.
Kid and you saw it and you were like, oh my God, I don't like this? Because you like everything. For me, it was Police Academy 5.
Was that Citizens on Patrol, or was that
Assignment
Miami Beach?
That's Miami Beach is 2, I believe. This one is 5. It's the one with like the
City
Mr.
Under
Claw.
Siege.
City Under Siege, I think.
Jesus Christ.
I watched it and I remember the first time going, this is terrible. And I'd never had that reaction in a movie before. Up until then, I loved everything I saw.
I'm about 7 years younger than
right.
you, so I enjoyed that movie because I saw it when it came out.
That makes sense. And what was yours? You said Batman and Robin.
It was Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
I saw it in the theater. It was the first movie I remember thinking while it was happening,
like, this
this is terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it
is terrible.
It is terrible.
I mean, I feel like growing up at the dawn of cable, I must have seen. I'm sure I saw a lot of movies that my parents liked where I'm like, this is boring.
Is there a movie you don't like?
Of course.
Or do you just like entertainment in general? People say that about me. I just like entertainment. Like, I like everything.
You know, it was probably. There were probably a couple. It was probably some crappy movie that was derivative of
Fast Times.
You sound
like Tom Cruise right now. Let's get an answer out of you.
No, I'm trying to think of. There were a ton of movies that I didn't like. There were a ton of movies I didn't like, but they tended to be more sports related movies.
Like Major League.
Major League, I love.
It's a great movie.
It's maybe the only sports movie that I actually love. is that one is a major that league.
Major League Two, Back to the Minors.
Did not like Back to the Minors.
Major League Three.
No, Major League Three is Back to the Minors.
What's two?
Major League Two is just Major League Two.
Oh, Major League Two. Major League Three is Back to the Minors. Got it.
Guys, let me hear
Scott Bakula. Scott Bakula in three, right?
Scott Bakula is the manager of the.
I do remember being. I do remember being super bummed out at Fletch Lives.
All right, there you go.
There you go.
I mean, like, really bummed it. But I've also said publicly that I did not like Ghostbusters 2. And Ghostbusters is one of my favorite movies of all time.
I don't care for you right now.
Again, I saw it, and they had the NES Advantage working the Statue of Liberty, and as a child, I'm like, I'm in.
Yeah, and that was started my lifelong love of Jackie Wilson music.
Yeah, but I'm sure...
and my lifelong love of effects not having to be consistent when the Statue of Liberty mysteriously changes sizes.
Sizes and turns. The head's turning.
Yeah.
Really weird.
So that
really
was
weird
sort of
choices.
By the way... You think it would just take you like 10 minutes to coat the entire inside of the Statue of Liberty with slime? Like, that would fucking... What are we even talking about?
Is, like, the pink slime always, to me, looked like bad school lunch tuna fish. That's what it always looked like. They were squirting all over the inside of that thing.
It looked alien to me. It didn't... I mean, the concept was fine. Peter McNichol was funny.
Peter McNichol's great in that movie. Iago? Fucking Janos.
Janos Poha. He was, you know, he was great, but... I don't know. I didn't like the relationship between Venkman and Dana Barrett in that movie. I didn't like – it just
– Now, there was the whole thing they shot where Rick Moranis becomes a Ghostbuster.
Yep.
Which I was really excited – I had heard about and was excited to see, and it wasn't in the movie. And it was – I remember being like, what happened to the thing? I think it was in a
– No, it's in there.
It's in there.
But it was like a whole thing. Like he was like a whole subplot that they lopped
it
out.
It is. It's there.
Is it there?
Yeah.
It,
I feel like you might just be watching some TV edit. Yeah.
Is that what it is?
It's in there. Yeah.
Interesting.
It's in there.
He pulls, it's in there. He wears a Spangler.
He does?
I'm a Ghostbuster at the end of the movie.
Yeah. Oh my God. Am I watching a TV edit? I've seen the movie a bunch of times.
He's the one who, like, he's shooting the museum, and when the slime.
Right, and he goes, I did it. I did it.
Yeah.
I guess he is a Ghostbuster.
He's a full on Ghostbuster.
Oh. Wow. Who knew?
Ghostbusters, what do you want?
Ghostbusters, what do you want? What do you guys think about the new one?
I'm excited about it
because
I love Paul Feig.
Here's my problem.
Yeah. Yes.
I think the proton packs that they bought, the proton packs bother me. I have no problem with the casting or the story.
You don't like the proton packs.
My problem is with the proton packs.
What about the? What if the story lends itself to the way that the proton pack looks like?
That's why
I'm
reserving that judgment for when I go. I'm going to go see it. No problem.
That was the only time with the new Ghostbusters, the only time I ever asked someone, can I please be in your thing? Because Paul, who's a great guy.
Just go to Boston.
Paul, who's an amazing guy, he wanted to come on Talking Dead. So I said, sure, come on Talking Dead. And then afterwards, not like that's why I asked him on, but I was like...
No, you had an agenda.
Listen, I've never asked anyone this. If there's anything in Ghostbusters to be a dream, he was like, sure, if there's something in there, I'll let you know. And I'm not in it.
You're not done shooting it.
Well, I would think at this point I would get a phone call and go, get prepared.
Maybe there's some hilarious thing. Did you see Chris Hemsworth on a motorcycle today?
That could have been Chris Hardwick on a motorcycle. But it wasn't.
But he looks
so first I didn't get to be Thor.
He looks hilariously dorky in it. Like, he looks like he's pulling a Rick Moranis in Ghostbusters.
I have so much faith in Paul Feig, and I absolutely believe that he can pull. I feel like he can pull.
What
it
I would love is to read all those other scripts that have been written in the last.
I want to read the one where Venkman is the villain.
Yeah.
Do you know about that storyline?
Well, there's like the Eitan Cohen. There's that one. That was the one before this one, and then the guys Lee and Gene. From The Office, worked on it for a long time. There's just been – and then there's one where they go to hell is obviously one that's been out there that Dan Aykroyd, I think, wrote.
After watching Bogus Journey?
I recommend you track down is the Back to the Future script from when they thought Crispin Glover was going to be in the movie and they put it in the 60s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Which script is that?
It's a script that is – that we found it in a at Culpeperson, which is the production company. They did Seven and some. I think they did Apocalypse Now. But
so they were
there was a script we found in an archive that was the Back to the Future 2.
Is it better?
Yeah. Well, it's not. But it's not like I love really Back to the Future 2, but it was this other story that existed that
followed George McFly.
Yeah. That was Marty having to go back to the 60s, and they're all like, George is like a hippie, and like Lorraine's, you know, a flower child, that kind of thing.
Oh, man.
Maybe that was, yeah, wow. That's, I've read the original Back to the Future script, which makes you feel good as a writer because it's like, it's imperfect. Like, they sent it out and it didn't sell, and it becomes a masterpiece eventually.
Yeah.
But just to read the first draft where, you know, the time machine works because he spills Coca-Cola on it and that's a secret ingredient and all these things that just kind of feel half-baked and aren't right until it takes that whole long journey. It makes you feel like, oh, they didn't just write this brilliant script and shoot it the next day. It was like a really long process of development and getting notes and working on it, and you know it's
oh well, even Ghostbusters, if you look at the deleted scenes, you're like, yikes, he made a good choice to cut that out. Yeah. I mean, it's and that to me is what's so daunting about the process of making movies, that there are a million different ways to fuck it up.
Yeah.
How do you know when it's right? How do you when it's right when you're that close to it and you just see it over and over and you don't even know what reality is anymore?
Yeah. It's amazing that any movie turns out – studio movie turns out good after having – going through that process a couple times. Just because the script, like you – as a especially as a writer, you get it to a certain point. The only thing that remotely is mine that is like to the page, to the screen, was this movie I did called Aliens in the Attic, which is kind of like a Goonies, Gremlins-y type movie that came out a couple years ago. That was because of the strike. They literally had no one to write it, so they just basically had to put it into production and shot my script. So that was kind of cool. But other than that, it's so – when you – there's so many – you know, you work so hard crafting every single sentence, and then you give it off to the director, and they're like, yeah, it's a rough template basically. So I've known writers that have showed up at their movie that their name is on, and they've never even seen it, and it resembles nothing that they did. So it's a weird – and then when you do TV, that's why I think writers – return to it or want to do it if they're doing movies, because you actually what you write actually is makes it.
Yeah,
it survives.
It's also kind of nice to have a regular job when it's going. Yeah. It's nice to have a place to go every day.
Doing 24 episodes though is insane.
Super easy, right? Oh, okay,
yeah. Insane. No, it's like this like Netflix thing with 8 episodes. Yeah. That's got to be great.
Mm-hmm.
At a certain point, like you just last year, there's a couple where the episodes just got away from us just because we had to keep going. Like we did a Princess Bride one, and I kind of watch it now and I go, we could have made this a lot better had we the time. We were barely getting all the clips cleared and all that kind of stuff. So, you just sometimes towards the end.
Andre the Giant dead.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Got another one.
Another one.
Another one claimed by the evil clutches of nature.
I mean, but that – I don't –
I can't believe they took Miss Elizabeth.
Coco, beware! No,
you know, I for the longest time, for like the last 15 years,
remember Coco's parrot's name?
No, but yeah, I know he. Yeah, okay. I know he had a parrot. That was his bed. He had a parrot.
I had hoped they would make, and I started trying to track it down like 15 years ago. I think a Greatest American Hero movie would be rad.
Yeah.
And I know that most people don't know what it is, but the premise of it is so fantastic.
It's amazing.
It's such a – did you watch any of the Greatest American Hero?
Feels like a Lord Miller, like they would hop on that
don't
movie.
Do you feel like it would take a long time? Because like the whole evolution of that program is him figuring out the suit more and more.
But that – yes. And I feel like –
also, I just called it a program.
The program. The program.
Yeah.
And I feel like the show kind of got a little boring when he figured out the suit.
Sure.
Like partway into the series – because if you don't know Greatest American Hero, which I'm pretty sure it's still on Netflix, but it's – you know, it's this guy, he's a school teacher, and there's an FBI guy played by Robert Culp, and these aliens select William Catt – oh, who's actually been on the podcast – to be the recipient of this space suit. Which apparently they go around the universe and give out suits to basically, you know, like this is use this for good and patrol your planet. And the suit has these superpowers and he loses the instructions. And so the brunt of the series is him trying to be a superhero while simultaneously trying to figure out how this crazy suit works. And it's fucking great.
Yeah.
That would
I agree.
Be such a great premise for a movie. You wouldn't even have to know the original.
Well, guess what? Bandai owns that, guys.
Oh.
Is that true?
No.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Dude, when we did a whole episode about the Transformers movie from the 80s, and not the new ones. Like
No. The one with Orson Welles and Leonard Nimoy.
And that was another one where no one knew who owned it. Like Sony was searching and searching, and everyone was like, I think it's that person over there. And, yeah, again, fell in that crack.
I saw that in the movie. My friend –
My friend Mike and I saw that in the movie theater, and
I love this story, by the way.
Do you know the story?
I hope it's about Starscream.
Which one?
When Starscream dies and you get so upset.
Oh.
Optimus?
That was a separate story.
You mean Optimus? No, Starscream?
Starscream dies.
I remember.
Galvatron kills him. And, yeah. And I had some friends over, and I was trying to – they were friends that I was trying to impress, and so I showed them that scene where – because I was like, well, of course.
But how old are you during this?
I was probably 13.
Okay, gotcha.
Maybe.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so, you know, because in the movie you're talking about, they just willy-nilly just start killing them left and right.
They kill everybody.
And they swear in the movie. Like, I saw in the theater, and there was like Spike says shit and or something, crazy. And like one of them – and so it's really weird that they went that direct. That would never happen now. I showed them the scene where Starscream dies. It's like, can you believe that? And then we didn't really hang out much again. Didn't really have quite
who's
the
this
impact.
Weirdo that's really invested in Starscream?
I mean, he was in the whole series. It's like,
I know.
I mean,
it's wrong to do.
It doesn't make it. It would be like if they made a Friends movie.
Yeah.
And then, like, killed Chandler in 20 minutes.
I literally went home after that movie, and I remade my own movie because I was so upset by it, where Optimus rises from the grave and lives. Because it was like – I loved that. That was my thing, the Transformers. And then to go and just watch, like, one bullet, like, come out of a Decepticon and hit – Ironhide, and he explodes. Like, what is that?
They completely changed – the physics of the movie and the rules of the movie. And I'm sure when they were pitching it,
It was for toys. We got to introduce new toys.
I know, but I get when they were pitching it, we're like, this is going to be really cool. We're actually going to do something that we could never do on the TV series. But as a kid, you're just like, what the fuck
are you doing?
Megatron
takes out, he's taking people out like execution style. It's brutal.
It's really, really brutal. Unicron's rad.
Yeah.
And
they introduced the Sharkacons.
Yes.
Those hit Transformers, and the Sharkacons.
The garbage plant. Yeah, it's very clunky.
Sharkacon.
Sharkacon. Let me rock a Sharkacon.
It's one notch away from Tank.
And then the garbage planet when they play Daredevil
Weird
Stupid.
Yeah, we'll get playing some Weird
Al. Eric Idle's one of the voices of the...
Yeah, no, it had some cool... I mean, you know, I've seen the movie a bunch of times, and... every season we play, you've got the touch. Stan Bush. So that's cool. That was one of those episodes, again, where I think you and I would have been like so into it. I was pitching it in the room. Secunda and I are going back and forth, and all the other writers are like, stop.
Hammer time.
Nobody knows what you're talking about. And I'm like, no, it's a thing. Like, guys my age went to see this movie and were traumatized. And they're like, no, they didn't. Dude, it was you and maybe like 20 people on Facebook.
You know what's interesting is that there are a handful of things from the 80s that I almost was convinced I was crazy because somehow when the internet lets you down and things slip through the cracks, it's almost like your reality – like for the longest time and finally someone put it up somewhere and I think maybe it's on Hulu now – but I had been telling people, no, there was an ALF cartoon on Saturday mornings, and it was fucking great.
Yeah, it was on Melmac.
There were some
with
where they would
Rhonda.
Do,
Rhonda.
Yes.
Say,
They would do some that were basically like a sitcom back on Melmac, and then they would do the second half of the episode was them like ALFing a fairy tale somehow.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, or some sort of classic story. And for the longest time, I was like, no, I'm telling you. And it was really funny. And it was very self-referential and very. And then finally, I made it onto Hulu.
It's all out there now, which is crazy. Like, you can even. I'll remember some really weird Different Strokes episode. I'm like, was that actually on television? And you'll Google it, and there it is. Yeah. It's
didn't
amazing.
Sam get touched or someone?
Sam got kidnapped. Sam got kidnapped. Dudley got molested.
Dudley got
in
molested.
The bike shop.
Repair
in the bike
guy.
Shop.
Yeah.
This might slightly blow your mind just in terms of of historic television moments. My family and I happened to be in Los Angeles when I was – this was like in 1980. I was a little kid. Somewhere we went to a taping of Different Strokes.
Right.
And the warm-up guy came out and said, so this is going to be a slightly different episode because we're doing what's called a spinoff. And so in this episode, we're introducing some characters from a new show called Facts of Life.
Wow, that's cool.
So they had all the Facts of Life girls, or at least the ones from the original season –
come on. I think maybe Tootie was there. A couple others came.
Molly Ringwald.
Molly Ringwald would have been there. And they were on Different Strokes at the taping.
I remember that episode.
Wow. You do?
Yeah, because the maid left and went off with them to be the house
mom. Didn't you also see the finale of Newhart?
I was at the finale of Newhart. Yeah, because I was friends with Peter Scolari, so I used to hang out at the Newhart set and saw the finale.
I think my family did the same thing, and we went to see Happy Days when Mork was on it.
Oh, my God. The weirdest television spinoff of all.
Ever. And you watch – the thing that's so crazy about it is, like, you have Happy Days, which is this show set – in essentially reality, right?
Yeah, then super grounded.
Super grounded, and then you introduce an alien. It's so bizarre that they would do that.
I think at that point they were like, our show is popular. It's like the end. Doesn't fucking matter.
It's like the end of Night Court.
Yeah.
When Bull returns to his home planet.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, whatever.
Who gives a shit?
Are we going to do this? Yeah, I think we're going to do it. Let's
this
do
table's
it.
Falling over with all of Laura Kett's Emmys. We might as well just fucking.
I mean, there were, you know, Happy Days and All in the Family and Mary Tyler Moore were these insane spinoff machines.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm.
That they, at a certain point, it just didn't even matter. Like, as long as we can put this other thing next to, you know, the old thing that people know.
Without a doubt.
By association.
Let me ask this. Has that worked in a while? I don't think there's been a successful spinoff.
I don't think they even really do it anymore.
Since Joey failed.
Because things are different now because the audience is... I mean, when you have something that has like 40 million people watching it every week, I feel like they go, well, there's enough audience to share to start this new thing. But I feel like audiences just aren't big enough anymore. I mean, like if 5 million people watch your show, they're doing fucking backflips at a network. It's just different now.
I was really disappointed NBC didn't do the Office spinoff, the Schrute Farms. You know, they did the pilot where they introduced all the characters and aired it as a television episode. But Parks and Rec, it wasn't perfect. But it's like, what else are you going to do, guys? Come on. Like, you have the team. Yeah. You have Dwight. Everyone loves Dwight. It's like, they'll figure it out. Why not put that on? Like,
I wish 30 Rock did a Queen of Jordan spinoff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good episode.
Werewolf Bar Mitzvah spinoff would have been great.
I'm actually kind of surprised there wasn't a Kenoff spinoff.
Kenneth spinoff,
but is that what Kimmy Schmidt is a little bit?
No, Kimmy Schmidt's just the same, similar team.
It
doing
just feels
a very...
so similar, which is
and I think part of the feel is the music is the same,
yeah,
because it was written by.
I think a Kenneth spinoff. I wonder. Do you think Kenneth could be the central character in something, or do you think he needs to be a supporting character?
I don't think so.
No, you have to be
because you would have to then shift him to be the normal character in an even crazier situation.
Exactly. I'm trying to think, like, to have any worked. I guess Joey's the last one,
really. The last one they tried,
which I enjoyed.
Yeah.
I don't know. Multi-counts are so hard that I think if it came out now, they'd have to stick with it, right?
I'm actually kind of surprised they haven't spun off a Big Bang in some way.
Right.
Well, give them time.
Yeah, that's true.
Once those contracts start going,
it's still going so strong. Yeah. I love it. I love it.
I mean, it's just a different time in television now. Yeah. It's just a different time, and I think it is amazing that you're 50 episodes in. I mean, I know from experience how hard it is just to get a show on the air.
I know.
Much less to keep a show on the air and have it be a hit show. I mean, it is very rare air to be in that. So nice job.
Thank you. At the end of last year, we kind of every week I was still looking at the ratings and panicked I was going to be canceled. And then my producer said to me at a certain point, like, dude, I don't think we need to worry like you're worrying. You always want to worry that you're going to be canceled or the quality's dropping off. But now I'm shifting my mind frame from like I'm going to be canceled at any moment. That's just because as a neurotic Jewish writer, I think you feel that way. To like, how do I make the next 50 great to get to 100?
Yeah.
So that's kind of the shifting. And it's a machine. Like, we started production and we don't stop. So it's you just got to get as far ahead as possible. And and start eventually bringing in those ideas that you're
do
like
that Scott Baio episode.
Do the Scott
Have
Baio
him play
episode.
Play the uncle.
Scott, he's Uncle Ted.
And she's
here
just confused because he looks
Uncle lovely. Scott too, which is extra confusing.
I'm telling you, if a spot opens up on your staff, this man is Matt Myra.
Is this a job interview right now?
Well,
I
didn't
can it be? I mean, listen, I took a cycle off from At Midnight. I'm just wandering around the desert right now.
No, I'm telling you, you should write on a sitcom, Matt. Matt, just because of how I mean, first of all, you've got the writer aesthetic
he
down.
Does, for
you've
sure.
You've got the Red Sox hat yep. and the T-shirt that's a reference to something
shorts,
weird like Cape Cod
shorts,
potato
yep.
chips.
Wearing shorts.
You got the shorts and you've got the kind of Urban Outfitters shirt rolled up sleeves and the beard.
Thanks, guys.
And the beard.
Sorry, I didn't wear my glasses.
Now all you need is a Mike and Molly spec and you're good to go. You're done.
That's right.
You need specs. Yeah.
Write a spec.
Why don't I just give you my pilots?
There you go. Oh, yeah. I actually don't. I don't read specs, actually, anymore.
How come?
I realize, like, why do I – like, half the shows I have, I don't know. So it's not that helpful.
Yeah, what's the point?
And just because I'm so, like, in my bubble of trying to make episodes, I haven't seen so many great shows right now. I haven't seen Silicon Valley, anything.
Yeah.
So – but then – it's like I really kind of at the end of the day feel like anyone can watch an episode and just of a television show and copy the characters and go, oh, this is how they break it out and do it and make it solid. Pilots are impossible to write and have them be good. And it's like when a writer sits down and they're like, this is me. It feels just like a better thing to get a sense of somebody. So I've just started reading pilots only.
Yeah, it's really – and pilots are a pain in the ass because – your main function is that you have to here's who these people are and how do I do that in an organic way that doesn't feel like the character going, hi, I'm this person and these are all my neurotic tendencies and here's my job.
For sure. My pilot, the good thing about doing a family show is I wasn't reinventing the wheel. So it was really easy. And it was just a standard, like when I went in and pitched it all around, they're like, I just talked about my family. I didn't even really tell stories. I didn't pitch a pilot story or anything because I'm like, it's a family show. It's going to be the kid's going to drive or something. So I'm not – it's like the hackier the story, almost the better because I just put my family members in there and they're nuts. So hopefully it'll seem different.
And then at the end of the meeting, they brought out a big novelty check and they said, welcome to the family. And then you started the next day.
The pitch for the Goldbergs was interesting just because I had all my home movies and all I did was show that. And then that was it, really. And then I talked about, like, and this is the dad, like the guy you just saw in the video. He's in his underpants, and he calls me a moron. And so it was, like, a really easy, simple pitch. And I'll never have that again, ever. Because I just had the ultimate, like, visual of what the – it's almost like I had shot it or something.
Right.
So I was just show the video, and then that was it all around town. So that was an easy pitch for sure.
That is fantastic. Yeah. That's fantastic. I mean, that is – do you ever kind of go – aha, it was all worth it.
Sure. I'm just happy to be working. it's been complicated. Like, I'm not going to lie, with my family, like, initially it wasn't the Goldbergs. They were the Silvers. That's why I have a sister on the show. I don't have a sister in real life. It was like I wasn't ready to embrace what I was going to do to my family and the world almost. So I'm like, yeah, it's my family. I mean, it's Adam and Beverly and Barry and Pops and Murray, my dad. But there's a sister, so it's not really my family. And then we shot the pilot. They were the Silvers in the pilot. And then Paul Lee, the president of ABC, like basically called and was like, we want to name it the Goldbergs. And we want to show your videos at the end of every one. Because he knew that I have like a 500 tapes. So he's like, I know you have enough videos to last the how many episodes we're going to do the show. And it just feels like different. Like this is really you putting yourself out there. And then I had to like call my family and be like, I have good news. This show is going to go on the air. The bad news is I'm going to show your videos like that I took of you when you're a teenager at your worst. Wow. So it's hard because, you know, my brother Barry gets it hard on the show. Like it's a hilarious character. And my brother, rightfully so, is like, you can't – like you'll do a – I'll be like – he's like, let's say you do a story about me. I don't – like I get caught smoking marijuana. Let's say you did that story. And that never happened in real life. But I'm like, but it's a TV show. And then he goes, okay, fine. But then you'll be like dedicated to my brother Barry and show a video of me at the end. So it's like, it is me because you show a video of me. So it's very complicated that way, and it kind of makes me – I can't sell out the characters for a joke because I show video of them at the end, and it makes people think it really is them. So I really have to be
– I don't know. In that case, I just think you go, fuck you, bye, and then just like really quickly hang
up. You don't want to piss off Barry Goldberg. It is a mistake. He's a good sport though.
He's
for sure.
Hulkamania.
So exactly. No, they didn't. They're just normal people. They didn't ask for it. There's nothing special about my family. I was really in the beginning like, why is this even happening? Like, we're just a family. Like, it's not like everybody hates Chris. Like, that's Chris Rock. I get it. People want to know how Chris Rock grew up. I'm just like a dude.
But it's the classic. I mean, this is basically that classic sitcom thing that it happened on a handful of television shows in the 80s where someone in the cast would try stand-up comedy. Everyone would go see that person. They would be bombing, and then they would just kind of default to start talking about what fuck-ups their friends and family were. And then they would start killing.
Yeah.
And then all their friends would be like, hey. You know? Like, then it wasn't so funny anymore.
It was a weird trope. I forgot about that.
Like, several shows did that.
And even more complicated is, like, I'll do a story, like, just because every episode I want to end it with, like, a hug and feel good with some 80s song playing. It'll be, like, an episode where the end Adam will be like to Beverly, Mom, you could come live with me anytime you want. Even when I'm a grown-up, you can move in my house with me. And then I'll get a call immediately from my mom. Is that true? Can I move in with you? So it's
stop looking for clues.
Yeah. So it's just the whole thing is complicated. It's I didn't expect it in the beginning, but it's – yeah. Sometimes I've hurt my mom's feelings with saying certain things that are very true that she doesn't want out there or she feels sensitive about. It's complicated. It's you know – it's hard too when people comment on the characters of the show, especially my dad who's not alive, like saying how bad of a dad he is or he's a lazy old fat bastard or any of these things. Like, I take it personally because it's my dad.
Yeah.
So it's just the whole thing's complicated for sure. At the very least, they'll just think it's Adam Goldberg the actor. So at the very least, they'll think that. So yeah,
I can't believe what that man did.
Hebrew Hammer did what?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that's true. That's right. That's two famous Adam Goldbergs.
Yes, and that's a thing. That has become a thing.
What are do people tune into the Goldbergs expecting to see Adam Goldberg, the other Adam Goldberg?
It's interesting. I shouldn't have. So basically, he and I got into a big Twitter thing this year arguing about it.
Really?
It's really fascinating because my whole career, I've just been this writer, and there's a celebrity, Adam Goldberg, who's an actor. And I followed his career. He has my name. It's cool. He was in Saving Private Ryan and Days of Confused. And I've rooted for this guy because it's like me, you know? It's like, oh, he has my name. And then the show came. He's been working the business for a long time, maybe, I don't know, 20 years. Mm. I've been working the business 15 years. So it's like, you know, I'm a little bit younger than him. And then this show came out and I had been developing Hebrew Hammer 2 just to get the chance to work with a guy, with the director Jonathan. It's Hammer versus Hitler. So so I do this show and it really never occurred to me that he would melt down in the way he has. So basically, over the last 2 years, I've watched this celebrity just melt down over the fact that we have the same name. Now, I don't know. He claims that it was a joke or that his persona is that he's curmudgeonly. But at first, I would email him and be like, hey, man, that's a funny tweet. I'm really sorry, dude. You know, people every day will hit me up on Twitter and be like, I loved you in Friends or whatever.
Right.
It doesn't bother me. I'm like, oh, you got the wrong guy. It's the other guy. But for him, he was like really upset about it and started tweeting really like mean things like, oh, yeah, the show is mine. I came up with it on the shitter. Like it started bumming me out. So this was 2 years of this. So finally, recently, he tweeted – that my show had been canceled and that it was now on TV Land and he has a show on TV Land. So watch that instead. So at that point, I'm like, okay, what do I do? Like I thought people, I'm a comedy writer. So I thought people would find it really funny and interesting if I went after the guy hard because what he did was uncool. People were very confused. they were saying, I'm so sorry, your show got canceled to me. It was a whole thing. So I came at them hard on Twitter. And the really interesting thing about it for me was that I think I didn't realize that people didn't know him sometimes. And to like the younger fans of the show, they didn't know who Adam Goldberg is. They don't know Dazed and Confused or Saving Private Ryan or something. So to them, I'm like a celebrity. So it was just a whole really weird experience. The other thing that was really cool or just really interesting was he went on a live interview as I was tweeting him, and they were reading the tweets to him.
Oh, weird.
So it was like the newsroom. We're making news. You know, ultimately, like, I don't know. I feel like I shouldn't have come at him so hard. That was probably a mistake. I think it was all in the name of comedy, and I thought it would be really funny. Yeah, I think he's never tweeted again about it. So so I got what I wanted. It's just been it was a really interesting thing.
Well, you know,
there's two dudes with the same name. Let's be honest. Our name isn't George Clooney.
No.
So it's like I think at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter, and that's what's funny about it to me.
I think also Twitter just isn't the best way to communicate things because you sometimes you think people are serious when they're joking, and other times you think they're joking when they're serious.
No, we were going hard at each other. There was no joke.
Oh, was it?
Well, at first people were like, is this a joke? Like, you're doing Hebrew Hammer 2 together. It's going to be a really awkward table read, by the way. people were like, at first, is it a joke? But, you know, I think it became clear when I, like, started retweeting his old tweets and stuff that it was not a joke and that people were definitely entertained by the fact that two Adam Goldbergs didn't like each other
and
were
going at each other. And in this gonna.
I wish it would be great if my name was George Clooney, because then I would get it. It's like, yeah, you're George Clooney. Like, it's confusing that you have a show called The Clooneys. But right. I don't know. It never occurred to me that people would confuse me for the
other
Adam
Goldberg.
There
are many other Chris Hardwicks in the world.
Yeah.
I've met one of them. He is a champion Rubik's Cube solver.
You should do a Chris Hardwick like convention where everyone goes with your name and you just kind of meet everybody. And I assume you're the superior one. That must make you feel good.
I mean,
the Rubik's Cube guy.
10 years ago, I didn't have great SEO. Now, if you Google Chris Hardwick, all me in the first page. My friend, there's this comedian named Jennifer McLean, and she did a show called, I think it was something along the lines of, my name is Jennifer McLean. I don't know if that was the name of it, but that was the premise, is that she was drive around the country and meet other Jennifer McLeans.
Right, yeah. That's a cool idea. Yeah, there's a ton of Adam Goldbergs in the business. So
what?
You know, it's just such a common name. It's almost like our name is the Jewish John Smith. So Adam, like the first person, and yep. Goldberg. So I don't know. I think the whole thing's ridiculous. It's hilarious
to
me.
Change your first name to Yitzi.
I guess, I don't know, maybe he took it more seriously than I did, but I think it's hilarious.
It sounds like the Goldberg hatchet has been buried.
Yeah, I guess so. If the tweets start up again, I look forward to tweeting at him hard again.
All right, you haven't learned your lesson.
It was exciting. I don't know. I don't get
There's
a lot
no
of excitement.
Hug at the end of this episode.
Well, I'm just I am so excited to know that you and I have exactly the same, all the same reference points.
We do. It's a great thing.
It is a great thing because there's a subtle form of communication that's involved that where we all speak a language that's of the time that we grew up and we all understand, and you could call out something and I could give you the other half of the quote and we would have that communication.
The most disappointing thing I've discovered is we have a lot of Teen Wolf references on the show. And a lot of our young viewers are calling me out that Teen Wolf did not exist in the 80s.
Because it's an MTV show.
It is a very popular – it's a great MTV show.
They don't know about Howard surfing on the top of a van.
They don't know. They know. They think Styles is a hip – the coolest kid in school from – and he's a 17-year-old.
That was a strange reboot. I mean, it would never occur to me to like – let's take a weird comedy from the 80s and make it for serious.
Yeah. I was so – I actually like that idea that it's so different than what you would imagine. But why even do it? Like the IP means nothing to anyone who's young. Clearly, they don't know it. So like why? For what purpose?
Why not just make it another
– Wolf Days. Wolf Days.
Well, guys, let's do a gritty
Monday Wolfie Day.
Let's do a gritty TV reboot of Police Academy.
Yeah, that would be great.
That sort of hour long like training day.
Yeah. Sure. And it's I guess it's tough when you have a guy doing sound effects to make that gritty. You know, well, I get, you know, Hightower, I get. That could be gritty.
No, it's a guy, dude. he got in the line of duty, got hit in the throat.
Yes.
With a stray bullet. So now he has to communicate with his phone.
Sound effects.
With all,
which
sound,
is all
effects.
Sound effects. And, you know.
And if you laugh at him, you're insensitive.
Right.
So they've
the
totally.
The Blue Oyster, the dark, gritty bar.
I still remember the song.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. That's, that's one of those. I'm sure that reboot is coming our way.
Oh, yeah.
It has to
be.
I don't know.
Even if the Goots takes over, maybe he becomes the head of the police academy.
Sure.
I love the idea of villainizing the hero, like villainizing the protagonist.
Yeah.
Like, I love that idea of that happening. I think, though, in reality, I would be kind of bummed if it didn't. Like, oh, no.
Mahoney. No, I imagine Mahoney is the guy with the goldfish now. He's the.
You think so?
Oh,
like Lassard?
He's the head of the police academy.
And then so.
Commandant Lassard. And
he
then
thinks that someone else is.
Proctor? You're talking about Proctor.
Proctor. Wait.
Right?
No.
No, Lassard
Proctor
had the goldfish.
Oh, no. Lassard. Okay, right. I thought you were talking about the bad guy.
Proctor's the bad guy.
Yes, yes, yes.
Gutenberg, I feel like, is Commandant Lassard.
Lassard, right.
Yeah. That he's. He kind of lost
the dad. You're talking about the dad from Punky Brewster.
Yes.
Let's see. Okay, gotcha.
Games.
Yes.
Yes. Punky Brewster. Who was
Punky.
Fucking great in Tootsie, by the way.
Yeah.
Punky. He was so funny.
Punky.
I love you, Punky.
Anyone from who's from the 80s can do their Punky.
Henry Warnemont.
But that's such a great scene where he gets the prostitute to blow Lassard, and Lassard's trying to give that speech while he's getting blown, like getting a blowjob.
Yeah.
It's such great comedy acting.
And by the way, one thing to talk about from the 80s is like your parents taking you to these like kids movies.
Yeah.
Like I saw Police Academy 1. Like I think it was rated R, wasn't
it? Yeah,
you
were always seeing tits when you were a kid.
Yeah, it was
constant.
It was crazy, like
constant.
Or going to see you know, god, any, I'm trying to think. I remember my brother went and saw Young Frankenstein.
Yeah.
With my mom and like screamed out and like during the sex scene like, "What's going on?" Just any of those. Or going
there's
to
not even much of a sex scene.
Yeah, I know.
There.
Or going to Risky Business, like, you know, it just, there was no R rating on for most of these movies. So or just
well, they got away with a lot more because it was before PG-13.
Yeah, no PG-13. Yeah. So, and your kids' movies, like Goonies, I can't show to my son. They say shit like 9 times in the first 5 minutes.
Right.
Oh,
and
I mean,
it's scary.
If you watch the original Bad News Bears,
yeah,
I mean it's super racist.
Super
it's like racist joke. It's like
dropping N-bombs. They're like they go for
this,
it.
This adult, and then he's like drunk, and the kids are drinking and and Kelly's smoking all the time.
Yeah, they celebrate and they're drinking beer. It's nuts. And that's,
celebrated actor Jackie Earle Haley.
Uh-huh, for sure. And that's one of those things when they were doing that reboot, like probably 10 years ago now, maybe.
Yeah.
And they're like, it's going to be like the edgy version of, I'm like, you can't get any edgier than that
they
movie.
Made the edgy version.
They made the edgy version.
You're not going to.
There's no bad Santa version of that. That's what that was.
If they make that worse, there's going to be full penetration.
Sure.
And someone's going to get shot in the face.
Sure, but that was a kids movie. That was like the 80s kids movie. And again, like Indiana Jones just like ripping a heart out. And can you I can't imagine showing that to my 7-year-old. He would never sleep again.
Yeah.
Well, even Jaws is PG and Gwen gets fucking torn apart.
Yeah.
Yeah, because our generation wasn't pussies. Ah, watch this. Sit down and shut up.
Yeah. That, when my 7-year-old gets up scared at Sophia the First on Disney Junior by the trolls, I'm like, you have no idea.
You don't even know.
At your age, at 7, I saw Aliens and I threw up in the theater.
Fucking Gremlins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gremlins
is
terrifying if you're
for sure.
If
well,
you're
that's
a
why
kid.
I slept with the light on until I was like 12 because of Gremlins.
Yeah.
I was like, well, if I sleep and have a light on, then Mugwise won't change.
That makes total sense.
Yeah,
so you're a little too old. 12 is a little too old.
Well,
but
it started when I was like 6
and
continued
just
on.
And that second movie didn't change your opinion because they were more goofy?
So good.
More goofy, more fun-loving?
Well, it made me not want the mess.
Gremlins 2, the new batch.
Yep.
Such a great idea.
There's now a Gremlin slot machine you can all play.
Is that true?
Yeah, in Vegas.
Again, they're doing that reboot. That's all the weird thing about my show is like anything we reference exists today in a big form.
That's funny.
It's really weird. Like, I think the one thing that we didn't well, I was like, oh, Poltergeist. We did a Poltergeist episode. And I'm like, oh, no one knows Poltergeist. Anyone under, anyone probably 20 or
and
below. And then it was like, oh, wait, it's in the theater. I didn't realize that. Like any title they're doing. Wow. So it's all completely cyclical. I think it's just because, I don't know, maybe the people making the decisions are like us. They're adults now. And they're like, I want to see, you know, I don't want this script. I want Poltergeist just because I like that movie growing up.
Right.
So maybe the people making the decisions.
Maybe that's it. Maybe that's why in the 90s, early 90s, there was all those, the Beverly Hillbillies movie, the Brady Bunch movie, the Gilligan's Island they want to do a reboot of.
You know, it was the Brady Bunch movie that started all, a lot of that shit.
Yeah, but I mean, it was even like.
No?
Adam's Family came out like 3 years before that.
But.
Was the stage show happening? But I think Adam.
Real Life Brady Bunch was on tour.
Been, but I think, like, I think Barry Sonfeld had Adam's Family in production in like 89.
Real Life Brady Bunch, I remember seeing it in. I think
so
maybe you're right.
At the same time.
But the Adams Family didn't make fun of
guys. My
the Adams
original
family.
Point is that
no, we're gonna Matt.
I want to watch this. Go.
But the Brady Bunch movie made fun of all the subtext of the Brady Bunch characters, right, yeah. Like because of the stage play, Real Life Brady Bunch. They didn't do that with the Addams Family.
They would juxtapose people and sort of here's the '90s version versus the crazy Addams Family.
I guess so, but I still think
that holds up. By the way, Addams Family holds up.
Addams Family Values, I think, is better than the Addams Family.
It is way better.
I agree.
Once again, Peter McNichol.
Yeah, there. There he is. It all comes back to Peter McNichol. It really does.
Get him in the show.
Love him on the show.
We're just going to start pitching you stuff. Like, what about this?
We've talked about it in the room. It's like that's why I think the 80s thing, I don't think will ever run out. Just because I, like, the deep pulls. Like, I was like, what about a short time thing I said in the room once? And that was one where everyone's like, no. Nobody knows that. No. No. No.
Who is our Dabney Coleman now? Who is America's Dabney Coleman now? I honestly can't think of.
Who is America's Dabney Coleman? What does that mean? Is that just a guy that's in a lot that you're like.
He's just a. Because he was.
I think it's post-Breaking Bad Cranston.
An everyman with a mustache, maybe?
You know what? Cranston in Short Time would be fucking phenomenal.
It would be great.
Mm-hmm.
That is a great idea.
It's a great idea.
Because he's got the comedy.
Yeah.
He's got the comedy to do it.
Yeah. Okay.
That would be a fucking great idea.
It would be great.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
America.
The America one, like of all the things Bryan Cranston does, he's like
short time.
He can do anything he wants in the business now. Anything he wants will get made. And he's like Short Time.
Yeah, for a long time, I've been wanting to reboot a Dabney Coleman project. But I heard the horse was a real pain in the ass to work with, so we should do Short Time.
So he's rebooting Beverly Hillbillies movie where he played Dabney Coleman.
Yeah, he's rebooting Beverly Hillbillies movie just to play the Dabney Coleman character.
Man.
Mr. Drysdale.
He's the best.
I'm actually, Or 9 to 5. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well,
there's some good Dabney ones
we've,
for sure.
We've solved a lot of things here today, Mr. Goldberg. And
is this the most random, like, no, okay, good. It's good to know.
No.
The most sprawling, okay.
I think with a guest, maybe.
No, we've covered some weird, in 750 episodes, we've covered some.
But I feel like we ping-ponged around
quite a
bit here.
We did.
Do you know who else we had an episode like this was? Chris Jericho.
Sure.
Jericho is all, like, he is in this reference bank.
Oh,
110%.
Wow.
It, like, all the shit that you talked about, he would be able to add information to all of that. He is like pop culture junkie from everything we were just talking about.
I love that.
Yeah.
That guy's awesome.
He is awesome.
Yeah.
He'd be a great guest on your show at some point because if you cover wrestling, because he fucking knows all of this stuff.
I love it. He knows Short Time. He'd be here with us.
He would know Short Time. As a matter of fact, he's the kind of guy that would tell you if I just said Short Time, Dabney Coleman, he'd start naming co-stars from Short Time too. Like he's that deep.
I love it.
Yeah,
I love it.
So the Goldbergs, you're going back into production, or you're back?
We're back. Now? We're shooting week two. This week is we're doing like a Milli Vanilli thing, which is really fun. week two of many, and. All I'm shooting for is same as the last 2 years. No, I'm not trying to change it up too much.
All right. And what's the time slot?
Time slot is 8:30 on Wednesday, after the middle, before Modern Family.
Great.
It's a whole night of family comedies. And Blackish at the end at 9:30.
All right.
So they've locked it in, ABC. They know what they're
Neil
doing.
Neil Flynn, then you got your Jeff Garland.
And then you got
Ed O'Neill. And sure. Then you can roll over into an Anthony Anderson. Yeah. You have yourself a good dad
That's
night.
It.
There's your whole dad
the
night.
The greatest thing is they didn't, like, we were so shocked. ABC just kept it the same as last year, which is amazing. It's so rare that it's great that they're like, oh, there's these four shows and they're staying put. So hopefully more and more people will come to these shows.
Great.
I think Modern Family really needs the ratings. They really need the help. So hopefully,
you know,
fingers crossed.
Someone should get them an Emmy.
Yeah, this could be their year. I'm thinking this could be Modern Family's year.
You know, the show's all
someone
about the
Someone should get
lead
Chris
in.
Lloyd yeah. another Emmy.
It's the lead. It's the lead in that matters.
There's another Chris Lloyd there.
Yeah, I wonder if they ever had that.
I wonder if there was ever Lloyd. A Chris Lloyd, Christopher Lloyd. Probably not.
I wish that would be amazing.
Christopher Lloyd does not use Twitter.
Yes.
So I don't.
And it's also Chris Lloyd. No, they're both Christopher Lloyd,
they're both
right?
Christopher Lloyd. Yeah.
Well, there you go.
We just call him Chris because he's in the business. You know.
There you go.
You should call Chris Lloyd and go, how did you deal with it?
I think we all know who the superior Christopher Lloyd is, by the way.
What?
I'm not going to say it, but we all know.
In time.
I might.
Yeah. I mean, come on, Doc Brown.
As the Frasier fan that I am, I don't know if I can agree with this.
Yeah,
Doc Brown.
I would love to be in a room with either. Let's put it that way. Those are two awesome.
Doc Brown.
I get that Twitter war. That's a Twitter war. I get. It's hard to debate who the spirit one is there.
But he was also in the Addams Family movie.
You're just doing this because you know his face.
Camp Nowhere.
Yeah, Nowhere's great.
I like that. Yeah, Camp
the
Nowhere.
The Dennis the Menace movie, which came out at the same time as those other bullshit remake movies, because those kids were as old as the people who are making decisions now are, which is why we're seeing reboots of all the 80s stuff.
Yes.
Which was my original point before we went on the diatribe of Barry Sonnenfeld.
By the way, there's been some great 80s reboots. So I always welcome those things.
Yeah.
It's helpful for me. And
but for every great one, you get 50 RoboCops.
For sure. For sure. For sure.
I'm actually surprised. It
wasn't great.
No.
But
Michael Keaton was fantastic in it. Oh, you can't.
Do that. It's not allowed. That was crazy. I don't know when we have to end, so just cut it off at any point. But that was crazy last TV season. Every television show was some reboot of a movie. I'd never seen that. It was bonkers.
That is pretty weird.
Yeah. It was crazy last year.
Everything, even like from Real Genius to some of them got on the air early. You know, we got Rush Hour and, you know, they tried Beverly Hills Cop and they were trying everything.
I
want
to see that.
Crazy.
I want to see that pilot. That pilot.
They did Beverly Hills Cop.
Barry Sonnenfeld directed it.
With Eddie Murphy.
Eddie Murphy's in it. Kevin Pollak's in it.
And
they must have been like, well, how is this not going to get
And Judge Reinhold was in it.
No.
Yes.
How
That's
is
crazy.
How did they not pick that up? Again, the pilot must have been unwatchable. It's the only reason. You have Eddie Murphy.
And you have Barry Sonnenfeld. And, like, Judge Reinhold. God damn it.
I think maybe it was done from a point of view, without having seen it, of course. Maybe it was done from the point of view of, like, oh, it's Beverly Hills Cop. People are already familiar with it.
No, it was like his son. It wasn't even about them. His son.
It was the son.
The classic son version of it.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it was Brandon T. Jackson. Maybe I'm imagining.
You just can't. I mean, like.
I'll get a hold of that script.
All right.
We'll read that.
Get a hold.
All right, Adam. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Enjoy.
Have me back anytime.
Please.
I had a great time. Thanks, guys.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Are you tired of dating assholes? Do you want a Prince Charming? If so, we're filming a reality show. Sign up here.
12 American women are flown over to the UK for a bachelor-style reality dating show.
There are so many questions about a show like this because it's so odd.
These women have been told that they were going to be dating the world's most eligible bachelor, Prince Harry.
What? Y'all playing with me, right?
You can binge The Bachelor of Buckingham Palace exclusively on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts or the Wondery app.